Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first Archery After Hours podcast, brought to you from deep within the bowels of the Wilderness Archery compound. We're diving into the story of one family, three generations, and a shop that's been shooting straight since 58. Think of this as a history lesson, folks. No, not bad at all. 1958. Think of this as a history lesson, but with more arrows, less homework, and a few signed dollars. We're going to jump in. Today is brought to you by, of course, Wilderness Archery and the Wilderness Archery team. Your hosts are going to be myself, John Scar, and the legendary Kingslayer, Elliot Peters.
No legends yet. What's happening? No legends yet.
Okay, well,
I hope people understand. I hope people catch that deep within the bowels thing.
Me too.
Si, senor.
Oh man, that would be great. That would be an awesome part of it. And you know, it's a little bit of
I'm gonna try to throw movie quotes in as we go. Not today, but just throughout this whole thing. And if people catch them, good on you. Just like if people catch what you just did.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah. So this is something me and Elliot have been working on for a while. This is going to be the Archery After Hours podcast. We're going to get into everything from bow hunting to target archery to good old fashioned conversations about silly stuff we've done. And we're going to do a little bit of that today. Today, I'm going to introduce you guys to Wilderness Archery, the shop that we both represent, and give you a little bit of the history and the background about this shop. Wilderness Archery was opened in 1958.
Just roll right into it.
That's what I was doing.
Okay, I'm just trying to follow along.
I got you. Okay. I was rolling. So we'll try and get a break, but we'll have plenty of commercial breaks where there's going to be like 30 seconds in between every, you know. You're just going to be hitting that skip button.
Breaking news. Hit the donkey.
I don't have a mic board.
Wednesday, August 27th. It's been reported that there are no Powerball jackpot winners tonight.
Ooh. You heard that live first here, folks.
Sickening.
Yes.
People already know, probably.
This is breaking news. We're bringing it to you straight from the Archery After Hours podcast.
We bought 80 tickets at work today.
Well, Jesus.
Yeah. You know what that does to you? Your odds are 1 in 292 million if you just bought one, which is terrible. If you buy 80 tickets, that brings it down to 1 in 3.6 million. So still not 1 in a million. It's terrible.
Yeah.
We'll probably do it again next week now that it's continuing on.
Anyway,
back to you in the studio, John.
Well, thank you, Mr. Peters. Bringing it back around to the history of the shop, you guys, Wilderness Archery has been around since 1958. It is the second oldest standing shop still in operation today inside of the United States. Outside, can't tell you much. Not a lot of information out there.
Nobody cares.
No, it's U.S. or nothing. So... I'm not biased, but it's okay. So anyways, you guys, going back to it, I'm gonna dive in here. Me and Elliot are gonna talk about the history. I'm gonna give you a rundown of what I know about the shop, what I've gleaned and learned, and then me and Elliot are gonna get into some of our most recent bow hunting stories. And well, you know, it's that time of the year, and we both really look forward to bringing you guys some really exciting guests here in the future.
Yes. So,
yeah, we're really excited. We have a few people lined up, and we're really excited to get into this. Like I said earlier, this is something we've been working on and really excited to do for a while now. So now that
we've
been
working a lot on this.
Yeah, I have. Yep.
I'm happy for it.
But, you know, to every Getty, there's a strong Michael behind him. So,
Damn it. All right. All
right. Anyways, so I'm going to give you guys the story of wilderness archery, where it began, everything. And we're going to start in Spokane, Washington in 1945 when Richard.
If I had the harp thing right now, I would go back with the harp sound. You know, on the soundboard.
Yeah, I know. About? I know what you're talking about. We need a soundboard. It's not professional enough. I work so hard and it's still not good enough. Okay.
No,
soundboard's next. We'll get there.
Soundboard.
Soundboard.
Otherwise, we're going to hear this chair squeaking the whole time.
Yes. You should probably stop moving.
Some lubrication. Some lubricity.
I got some lubrication.
Go. Just go.
Okay.
No, you don't.
In 1945, Richard Woltering, a.k.a. Papa Dick. This is the founder of Wilderness Archery. He is Mike Woltering, the current owner's father. He began building bows in 1945 in Spokane, Washington. And in 1955, Papa Dick had an opportunity to move down to the Sacramento area to take a job at the illustrious Aerojet facility. And I actually got to see him on Sunday. It was pretty cool. We were talking about what he did back in the day. He had lots to say about my tattoos. It was a lot of fun. He's old. He's an old timer. He's a good guy.
You weren't shirtless at the time, were you?
No, I did. Damn I did it. Not want to
Damn
cause
it.
Any kind of stroke or any sort of.
Oh, that would do it. That would do it.
He was
good.
All he saw was my legs, and he was still incredibly asphyxiated on the amount of tattoos that I had. So, yeah, shame on me. So,
how are you ever going to get a job?
I don't know. I meander around. I give archery lessons. I make ends meet. That's it, you guys. I don't really do anything. Yeah. Nobody likes me. I don't have any friends. Nobody wants to shoot with me. So I just do what it is.
This is taking a dark turn.
Another inside joke, but okay. Anywho,
Aerojet, back to you.
Back to Wilderness. So Wilderness opened up shortly after the Woltering family moved down to the Sacramento area in 1958. At that time, there was only one other shop in our area. It was Frontier Archery, and they were more directly located in the Sacramento area. And Papa Dick wanted to open a shop more in the northern side of Sacramento. We call it the greater Sacramento area. And he opened up Wilderness Archery in 1958 off of Auburn Boulevard in the Citrus Heights region of Northern California. And he worked full-time at Aerojet and then worked his afternoons at the shop. Mike Woltering, the current owner, the second generation of Wilderness Archery, he was born in 1954. Mike pretty much grew up in the shop. He's been at the shop since he was 8, 9, 10 years old. And Papa Dick had him dip in arrows. And if anyone knows if anyone knows what that includes, that's a lot of brain cells gone and a lot of time. It's there was no aluminum back then. And
I'm not wrapping arrows anymore. We're going
back to dip. No aluminum, all wood. Yep. Small room.
Okay. I don't know about that, but we'll dip the carbon.
Okay.
We'll just spray paint it.
Your stuff is about as fancy as it can get, so I wouldn't be surprised if we started spray painting arrows.
Yeah, dude. I'm this close to huffing chrome paint at this point.
I saw a video the other day of people that got caught huffing in like their jail pictures. It's all their faces
dude,
all covered
in
paint.
I don't know what it is about the chrome or the metallic paints, but I guess those are the ones. Because yeah,
those are the ones.
Like the
they're
tin
all
man.
Yep, tin man or like they've been eaten.
I had a joke from Star Wars.
Oh, 3CPO.
Sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say Goldfinger, but we both had good jokes for that, but we put the brakes on them. So Mike grew up working in the shop. We're going to scroll right back to Wilderness here. We're going to have some pauses like this, you guys. This is just a little bit of banter, a little bit of fun along the way. Mike started working in the shop when he was super young. And at about the age of 16, he started working in the grocery industry. And he worked part-time at the shop still in the afternoons, and then he started quickly growing in the grocery business, and he had to kind of taper off some of his responsibilities at the shop. But Mike always made time to come back in the fall, our busiest times of the year, June to September. Anyone who works in the archery industry knows that June to September is pretty much the busiest time of the year. I just had a guy in the shop the other day who came in and his bow, like the drop away, he had a QAD, it wasn't dropping and everything. And I told him, I was like, look, you got 13 bows in front of you right now. And there's like a whole pile on the wall waiting for strings and everything. Like it might be done by the end of the day, you know? And
was his two white marks not lining up?
The QAD thing, the where the rope pulls like this, this one, it looked like that.
Yeah.
And
it's probably too short. I've seen that before.
Yeah, it was. And he's like, I got to hunt tomorrow morning. And he's from out of state. And I was like, I mean, buddy, like
he's from out of state and he came to California.
Yeah, I know. Terrible
Who
idea.
Who is that?
He's an old customer of the shop. Great guy.
No kidding.
Yeah, just he moved out of state and he killed a buck opening weekend in C zone. And then he had a D3-5 tag and said, I'm going to go get after it, and came down and his stuff is not hitting at all. And it's because his veins are the ones that are knocking his drop away down.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. Classic. If you don't have enough tension there, or if your timing's off, all kinds of different stuff.
Well, I've actually over tensioned a QAD and ruined it. Put it in the draw board. The cord was too short. Drew it back, not thinking, because I couldn't feel any tension because I was drawing it back.
Yeah,
and ruined it.
Yeah,
that's
it's not
the only failure I've ever had with a QAD. It was self-induced.
Yeah, but it's not hard to do. It's not hard to fix, but it's not hard to do if you don't know what you're doing. And so,
if it means slapping a new rest on a guy's bow to get him back out in the field. Whatever.
Yeah. Great guy.
From out of state. He came to the shop looking for help. That's cool.
Exactly. But back to Mike.
If you showed up to the shop trying to get new strings on August 27th.
That's the point that I was trying to make is
tough.
We all know that this is the busiest time of the year. Everyone wants their stuff done right now. And it's like, I have, you know, the last 2 months we've had, you know, 70 bows in Wilderness, waiting to get strung, ready to go, 30 to 40 on the back rack, waiting for strings, and 15 to 20 on the work rack, just at all times.
You know what drives me nuts is the people that think they need strings all the time. Dude, you and I both know, like, just even if you have some serving separation,
no.
Who gives a shit? It's not going to hurt nothing.
No.
It's not going to hurt nothing. Those strings are so tough, you could cut half of them with your broadhead and still get through the weekend. I wouldn't advise it, but it could be done.
Yeah, it just depends, too, on what material you're running, you know? Like, our strings, me and your strings are going to be fine, but you get a set of factory strings in there, and it's going to be, you know, I would not shoot a half. Like,
no, I wouldn't either, but I wouldn't advocate for any broken strands, but like everybody I talk to, that's like kind of a bow hunter, but they're like, oh, I'm going to drag that bow out. It's been a couple of years. It probably needs new strings. And I'm like, doesn't sound like you shoot it. Probably doesn't need anything.
Yeah.
It probably needs you to shoot it some more. Don't worry about the strings. Just because they're old or got dirt on them, just shoot the damn thing.
The only thing I recommend for people who have bows that have been sitting around for a while, if you don't know what you're looking for, bring it into us. Let's take a gander. Let's make sure those limbs and those cans are good after being under tension. And typically, in my experience, they're not under tension in, you know, this air-conditioned room that I'm in right now.
No.
They're in people's attics and garages.
No. Grab a cotton ball and rub it on those limbs. And
yeah.
If you see some pulling, well, don't buy a Hoyt. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. You can cut that out.
Don't buy a Hoyt from the Bowtech shooter.
And we've all had our limb problems. I'm not even going to go there.
I haven't had any.
Yeah.
Mine have all been good
for 4 years.
Whatever. So
tell me I'm wrong.
Five.
Okay. Rounding up tonight.
Yes, rounding up. I prefer rounding down as
depends what we're talking about.
The firm, yes, exactly. Depends on what we're talking about. So back to wilderness. Mike gave Papa Dick the opportunity to retire. He came to Mike and said, hey, I've been doing this for 38 years. I'd like the opportunity to retire. And Mike gave it to him. He purchased a shot from him in 1955. And Papa Dick retired. Mike,
1955?
Sorry. 1995.
He was 1 year old, I was going to say.
1995. You're right. You're right. Good catch. I'm right over my head.
Jesus, Mike is an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And the I thought the shop was younger than that.
Yeah. No.
So 1995, Mike purchases the shop from Papa Dick, and Papa Dick retires. And pretty much immediately, Mike purchases a building and moves the shop from the Citrus Heights, Auburn Boulevard area to Rockland, where we're currently located. And during this time, Mike continued to work at the grocery store for the next 10 years. He'd work from 5 a.m. till 2 p.m., and then he'd come and close the shop down from 2 to 7. Now, at this point, I got to highlight a special individual to Mike in the wilderness shop that most people nowadays probably don't know or have known is Wally Jenkins. He was Mike's key and most pivotal individual at this time. Wally came to the shop every day from 11 to 2, opened, operated the shop by himself while Mike finished up working at the grocery store before he came. And Mike expressed his absolute gratitude and you know, basically said the wilderness probably would not be here today without Wally, because he didn't have the bandwidth or the capacity at that time to operate the shop in the way that the shop needed to be operated. And Wally Jenkins
is
this guy
still around? Do you know?
No, he's not. It was a really nice moment that me and Mike had when we were talking about it. I could just see how much this individual meant to Mike.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, all of us wilderness guys, and not just team shooters, but customers and loyalists to the shop and family and friends, we got to throw it up to Wally Jenkins, because without him around during this pivotal time in wilderness, the transition period between father and son, the new building, all of that, who knows if wilderness truly would have made it around. I believe it would have, because I know Mike and I know the family so well that I think that they would have been just fine. But Mike really keyed on the fact that he was a pivotal part of the wilderness family and making the shop operate during this time. Now, cool. Moving on with family, a lot of us that shoot and are regulars at wilderness, we all know Matt and Andy. The two sons of Mike, they grew up working in the shop, treating arrows, and basically the shop was summer camp to them. And they I know, right? The amount of information these guys have forgotten about archery and working on bows is more than we will probably ever know. It's pretty vast. Mike's been working in a shop for 60 plus years, and Matt and Andy have been in the shop around pretty much every experience you can have, from a blown up bow to a string change to a peep install, since they're five, or however old you can walk around at nowadays. I don't know. And they grew
four
up
or five for sure.
Kids walk
into classrooms lately. As a parent, I'm pretty sure all the kids I saw at the school were walking upright.
Those guys, they grew up.
Get us out of here, John.
I'm working on it. The wheels are turning. The mud is flinging. We're getting out of here real quick. Matt and Andy grew up dusting the shelves, cutting arrows.
Yelling.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Matt and Andy grew up dusting shelves, cutting the arrows.
Don't seduce me.
Matt and Andy grew up okay. dusting the shelves, cutting arrows, and most importantly, avoiding the feather burner smell in the back room. Those are like the key things that the guys told me about. They're like,
I'm gonna have to start burning some feathers. I don't know what that's like.
Apparently it's atrocious because it was the one thing Matt and Andy both.
It's probably without, similar to burnt hair, I would imagine.
Without talking to each other, it was the one thing they both talked about.
Dude, it was pretty funny. You ever seen it work?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You like spin it and
so
it's
so cool.
Yeah.
I could watch that for hours.
Oh man, it's amazing. I was watching before when you texted me, I was watching people put firecrackers underneath a pot and watch it fly up in
you
the air.
You sent that to me.
Yeah.
You sent that to me.
I probably did.
I know you were. You tried to get me to watch it with you. but little did you know that I watched that shit months ago because I am a pyro.
I know. No, I've been watching those for months. They come in my feed regularly, but that one was a good one, so I shared it. So moving on, Matt and Andy, they're the future of Wilderness Archery. They're going to inherit the shot from Mike coming here very soon. And personally, I really look forward to Matt and Andy running the shop and seeing the future of what the shop holds. Not that I have anything against Mike. I love Mike to death. I look forward. I like the storyline of there being us being a three generation shop. And yeah, Matt is a key, pivotal role in keeping the shop moving day to day. And Andy is also that, keeping bows moving in and out and working with customers like crazy. So I'm really just looking forward to
it. I told you the other day I had that buddy go down there, bought a bow from a guy at work, and I called down to Matt and I was like, hey, dude, do you have any mods for this guy? This is kind of what his wingspan is. And he's like, yeah, dude, I think we can make something work. And so I told him, I said, hey, Trevor, go down there, talk to my Matt. He knows you're coming. He knows the story. And I asked him the next day at work. He's like, yeah, dude, they were super cool. Got everything dialed, bolted everything on for me. Like, he was super happy to leave with a bow that fit him, and I was like, awesome, thanks Matt for doing that, just for a buddy of mine, you know, being able to send people places and know they're taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. I
shameless
love
plug.
Matt is fantastic. I love working with Matt, and we have so many inside jokes together. It's fun. Same with Andy. Me and Andy, it's kind of like having an older little brother. If anybody knows, then if you've been to Wilderness, you know why I said that, and it makes sense. But first, you also have to have seen me in person. So, it's like having an older little brother who we just rip on each other. You know, it's a lot of fun, and so that's why the shop. Personally, 3 years ago, the shop came to me, asked me to take over the lessons, and basically manage the privates and the group lessons for the shop. And I was happy to do it. I wasn't even a shop shooter, I don't think, at that time.
I don't think so.
It was right before I was, Doug and Mark and Randy reached out to me and asked me to join the Wilderness team. But at that point I'd been shooting target with the Wilderness team all year. And that aside, it didn't matter to me. I had become so close with Matt, Andy, and Mike, and everyone that I felt honored to do that and to be asked to do that. And so, when I say it's like a family vibe, I understand that not everyone will have that same exact experience, especially if you come in on a Saturday. We're extremely busy, but we will do our best to give you the best attention and everything.
Yeah, don't come into any bow shop in August and talk about strings.
Don't do
miss
that.
Miss your chance by 3 months.
Yeah.
And you don't deserve any smiles.
No smiles.
I kid.
But no.
Unless you're getting ready for indoor season, this is the appropriate time to do so.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a target shooter, come in and get strings anytime. You guys know how it is. Your bow's going to be sitting for a little bit. Luckily, Wilderness, we're one of Gas's top distributors, so we get a little bit of leeway on the wait time there. You're not going to have to wait as long. And we also have a plethora of these strings on in stock. So,
dude, little plug for gas.
Yeah.
And I don't shoot for gas. I shoot for Wade. Wade's my buddy. I like Wade.
Yeah.
But I hung out with the guys at Gas. They were next to us in the Bowtech booth at the TAC in Utah.
Solitude.
And those dudes, dude, Eric and the crew, they ran a pit shop all weekend long. They had the best tunes in camp, which was awesome. But they had that bow press was probably warm. They had guys coming in and out, and they were just helping people left, right, and center all weekend long until well into the evening. It was cool. Very cool group of guys.
Something that I haven't even discussed with you yet, but we might have a conversation coming here very soon with some of those very same people.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Giddy up.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Giddy up.
Giddy up. Homage to Kramer. So anyways.
I'm not a Seinfeld guy.
Shame on you.
Sorry, dude. Sorry. I took that time to watch Trailer Park Boys.
Trailer Park Boys was significantly afterwards. If anyone is looking for a national event partner for next year, please reach out. I'm available. Oh, so once again, you guys, Wilderness
Where
Archery, 1958, one family, still in operation, second oldest operating shop in the United States. And by the way, that second place comes by like a couple of months. It's
practically a tie.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing. Another great shop out on the East Coast, from what I understand, another family owned and operated shop for the entire time. So it's very cool to see. And that's something that I talk about with customers in shop all the time. And if you've dealt with me personally, you've probably heard this. This is a industry that's built on the backs of small business and family owned business. And so I pay homage to that. I don't know if I said that correctly. I
think it's homage with
the H. I think I left out the H. Yeah, me too. I think I did. But basically,
or maybe it's yamage with a J or something like jalapeno. I don't know.
Homage. Anyways,
you said a very Jewish thing.
I'm trying to move past it. I like to point out small business and family owned and operated companies to customers, not because they give us better deals or because that's who we have. We have every company in the shop. So that's something that we're blessed with. We have, I think we're dealers for 12 brands, for bows, and we got all the arrow companies, and it has nothing to do with that. It's just, this is an industry that is built on the backs of small business and specifically family run business.
Yeah.
And so anytime I can push it back to that and say, hey, you know, I want you to support your local bow shop, whether that's us or a different bow shop, that's fine. I
was going to say, on the West Coast, we're kind of, I would say spoiled, but we're spoiled. Like if you look at Nevada, we're spoiled. Like, I mean, Wilderness, hell yeah, brother. But like we have good friends at West Coast. We have good friends at Impact. I mean, there's some great shops on the West Coast. And if you can just support whichever one is yours or closest or whatever, instead of Lancaster, if you can help it, you know, by all means.
And by the way, you guys,
to another point,
brings us to the next point.
It's easy to do.
It's easy to do.
We have a kick-ass online store.
Absolutely. We have been working
we'll drop ship to you.
Tirelessly on our online store, you guys. It is really phenomenally built. It's built off of the design of the biggest online store that we all know the name of that I shall not speak. Pastor Cam.
Pastor Troy and the Eastside Boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We worked really hard on this online store, and it's something Wilderness is getting into and diving our toes into right now. And it's working out really great in the sense of how easy it is for customers to use and operate. It's really exciting to see customers come in. There was a guy that just came in the other day. Hey, I bought a bow on the online store. I want to pick it up. Really? And yeah, it was really cool.
Hell yeah.
And I'm like, well, I've never.
Like, I'm glad that this happened because, like, you know, I live an hour away, right? I have the shop ship me stuff all the time, and I thank God that they do that. But now this is even, you know, beyond that.
Now let's be honest. Who's shipping
it for me?
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I've talked to Matt before, and he's made sure it gets out there. Like, yeah. It's all good.
Yeah, he does. But
as
I
much
do
as
most
I want to come
it.
Down and go to Kenzo's, but yeah, well, I appreciate it. But no, this is good.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had before, like years and years ago, I've had West Coast do that. I didn't know shops did that so much, but it's helpful that shops are doing that. So don't think you have to go to the shop if you just need anything.
Yeah.
And
we
online and have it shipped.
We have it all. We
just
have.
Don't go to Amazon and do it.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't go to Amazon. We have anything that you see in our store is up on our website and on our online store. It's just on our website, wildernessarchery.com. It's incredibly well built, well designed. We both got to give a shout out to Dan Birdo. The guy's working tireless.
Bertaccini.
I'm gonna say Bertaccini. He'll correct me tomorrow. It's all good.
That's how I would say it.
I think that's how it's said. Guys, phenomenal.
Recognize that name from the like NRL Hunter world or PRS world, rifle match world. He puts on a hell of a shootout in Arbuckle, I think in April.
Yeah.
Dan's
and
a cool cat.
He's a really cool cat. He's gonna, you know, you're gonna see a lot more
cool
of Dan.
Cool asset that we have. That's good.
No.
And he's shooting some pretty bitching arrows, if I do say so myself.
Well, I talked to him about that today.
Uh-oh.
He had one of my
targets.
No, he had me. Yes, he's shooting bitchin' arrows. Those are some really cool PS27s with like the old 90s gas station logos on them. I don't know where he got them from, but whoever gave them to him is a pretty cool cat. And probably needs a national event partner for next year because he doesn't watch Seinfeld. But so you told me you're like, oh yeah, he shot like a 298 and
no?
whatnot.
Did he?
No.
Really? Oh bullshit. No, I counted the X's and the nines. He had like a 297 or something or better.
Okay. Yeah. How were those punched into the target?
I didn't look.
Did they look familiar? Do they look like something I do when I punch in holes into the target face to count the arrows?
Did you do that?
So he was shooting my target face, and he was just sending you a photo saying, these things are flying great. I got them shooting good.
Son of a bitch, that was your 297?
Yeah, it was.
That's funny. Oh, man, I was like, shit, Dan's for a freaking first year shooting indoors, like he's doing great.
He's gonna do great because he's got that experience with the whatever you said, long range shooting. He has
another
the
offhand sport where you have to be stable.
I know. You know, he just got back from Oklahoma where he got second.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal long range shooter. And so
if I had more time and archery wasn't a bigger part of my life, that's where I would be going. That I've been and watched a buddy of mine shoot, and it is
out at Arbuckle, right?
Very cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was out at Dan's place unknowingly.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool thing. I can't get into everything yet, you guys, but
we'll have him on and talk about it.
We'll have him on to talk about it. We'll have him on to talk about all kinds of stuff.
Shoot comes around, but yeah, we'll talk.
Absolutely. Before his shoot comes around, but we might also be hosting a shoot out there sooner than later. So be on
and
the lookout
shoot.
And
a
be
3D shoot.
Be to an archery 3D shoot. Be tuned in to the Archery After Hours podcast to get your latest updates on that. So
hot damn.
Quit hot diggity. We're going to jump into how the Wilderness Archery team was created because myself and Elliot, we both represent Wilderness Archery. Mike came to a legend in our area specifically, and a legend in the industry, Todd Hawkins, and basically said, hey, there's a lot of shops out here. Yes, exactly. Todd, fun fact, Elliot was the first winner of the Todd Hawkins Indoor Memorial Shoot. So Mike came to Todd and said, hey, I see a lot of people out at these tournaments. They're just buying shop shirts and they're shooting, and there's no notoriety or pride or anything around that. And so he came to Todd and he basically said, I want you to create the strongest, stoutest team there is, but I also want it to be something that's not handed out willy-nilly. I want it to be something people earn, and I want there to be pride and some, I'm missing the word for it, some aspiration to be a part of the team and things like that. And I know for myself, speaking for myself specifically, that is something that meant a lot to me when Doug and Mark came to me and offered me the opportunity. And it meant a lot because I'd been working hard and shooting with those people. But not just because I'd been working hard and shooting well around them, but because I looked up to those people. And I knew that they were the stoutest shooters and some of just absolute legends in our area. And I wanted to represent the same team, and I wanted to emulate their shooting capacity and their personas in the industry. And so that was the big expectation of the Wilderness team. And Mike has no say in anybody that gets put on the team. Basically, the team captain at the time, which was Todd, would come and say, hey, I want to put this person on the team. And if there was some extenuating circumstance that would stop them from being eligible to shoot for the team, then that's where it would be brought up. But it had never occurred. And then after Todd Hawkins passing in late 2022, Mark and Doug officially took over the roles of two-part captain to the team. And later that year, they actually gave Andy Woltering, Mike's son, his team jersey. So that'll show a little bit of the lack of bias there. It's a team that's sponsored by Wilderness, but we're here to represent archery, and we're here to represent the shop that we care and support. But it is not by any means, you know, nepotism does not exist around here. So Mike wanted me to shout out the team and say that it's grown and become bigger and far surpassed anything that he ever expected. And he's extremely proud of the accomplishments that team members have had. Individuals like Mark Rubio, Vegas champion, Caleb Quiocho, Vegas champion, and now youth world champion. And then other individuals as well. Doug Rosin, national champion. And just everyone as a whole. He really wanted to highlight the fact that the team grew and became something that he could have never imagined. And it is incredible to see what it's become. And kind of a community fun fact, as I like to call it. Wilderness Archery Shooter is still with us today. And the early 50s and, or sorry, the late 50s and the early 60s, Jim Yocum, one of our current team shooters, I believe he's 84 now, he was the original Wilderness Archery staff shooter for Papa Dick back in the day. And Jim's got just an absolute, I can't even tell you how many national championships he's won. He was the guy back in the day. And so it's pretty cool to still see him around shooting. He's just an absolute hoot, a wonderful individual. One of my favorite people to hang out with at the local range and just talk to and catch up with, because he's so supportive, so friendly. And he's just an all around good guy. And so it, still seeing him out there getting after it and getting after it competitively. He's switched to left-handed because he holds the bow steadier with his right hand.
That's crazy.
He's not just accepting the fact that he is getting it. So it's really cool to see. And I look forward to seeing him for many more years, shooting many more events. He's a quality individual. If you see him out and about, don't hesitate. Stop by and say hi. He's just an absolute wonderful individual to talk to and chat with.
Yo,
ahoy.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. You there, buddy?
Dude, I switched connections to a freaking extender, a Wi-Fi extender, because I'm out in the bridal suite, and I was talking to myself a lot back there.
Well, I just kept rolling.
I don't know why that happened. No, I noticed. I didn't have much to say anyway.
Could you hear me?
Oh, I heard you great. And it took a minute, but I was like, hey, son of a bitch, don't talk over me like that.
Awesome. Well,
yeah, whatever.
We're going to move into kind of the bow hunting portion of the evening. I'm obviously, as everyone knows, the Youth World Championships just wrapped up, and we look forward to giving you a more in-depth breakdown of what occurred there, how it happened, what happened, all of that. But it's archery season for deer.
Word.
And bear.
Yeah.
And technically pig, because pigs open year-round. So we're going to dive into some of that.
Anyway.
Yes. And we're going to get into that youth championship a little bit later. And so look forward
to it. There's not much to dive in on the bow hunting portion of it, unless you've been doing some whacking and stacking. I personally have been doing a lot of walking and talking to myself.
But that is some of the most enlightening times.
Like 10 days.
That's some of the most enlightening
stuff. You need to do it. Men's mental health awareness. You need to go out and talk to trees sometimes by yourself.
Where I was at, it wasn't trees. It was bushes, but yeah.
Bushes, trees, you know, it is what it is.
There was trees, technically, but they were far and few between. Yeah. Easier to talk to. So, now into bow hunting. Elliot, as much of us know, you had an exclusive archery tag in the dry state of Nevada. So, why don't you give me a breakdown? Tell me, first of all, I want to ask you, how many points did it take to draw that tag?
So I had, I think, 3 points going into it.
Oh, okay. And what part of the, you don't need to give me the region or the unit specifically. What part of the state? Is that near the Rubies that you were at?
Yes.
Okay.
Like.
North side?
Really close. The Rubies themselves are humongous.
Yeah.
It's a long, skinny, narrow mountain range running north and south.
Yep.
On the east side of the state. I did not draw it first chance, but I got a email maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago now, probably 6 weeks ago, probably, that I'd gotten a alternate tag. There it is.
Go get them, guys. Ramrods. Go get them. Excellent bars. Continue, Elliot.
Yeah, I got an alternate tag. So I was planning on hunting my normal hunting the Sierras in California like I normally do, and I've had decent success. I feel like I'm finally figuring it out, but I got an email saying, hey, you're going to Nevada, bro. And I went, oh, goodness. That changed everything. So we went back, me and my cousin Justin, who went back with me in 21. We got a hold of our good old boy Doug, who's hunted that for a long time.
Yeah.
And happened to be,
you're talking about Rosin?
There. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And he was back in there. Already, I chose because I had a week blocked off at work and I wanted to make sure that I could hunt Nevada and then come home and possibly go back and hunt California. So I chose to hunt. We went up the 15th. That way, when we got back, California would be open by then. And anyway, we got back in there, hiked our asses off. The Rubies, if anybody's ever been, are gnarly.
They are. I drive past them every year.
Try walking in them. They're absolutely, I mean,
it's, I don't need
some
to.
Of the most beautiful. Try it. It's cool. Again, for your health. It's incredible country, and you never regret going, because even if it ends up just being a backpack hunt, it's very, very cool compared to the kind of stuff that we get to hunt. But we saw one giant buck.
A little bit more open.
Of him. Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't get to hunt elevation like that. I mean, we can, but, like, you know, we were camped at over 10,000 feet, which I've never really done. It was awesome.
Really?
But
I didn't even notice the rubies were that tall.
Oh, bro, they get taller than that.
I didn't even notice.
I mean, I was, the very first evening, we looked down on mountain goats.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. It was cool. It was very, very cool. Crazy.
Man, I look down on a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, and I see a lot of ugly mountain goats from my view.
Up there. Yeah.
I know, I know. I'm trying to make a joke of your beautiful time. Continue, sir.
Yeah.
I'm
no, it was a freaking soul-crushing event is what it was. I mean, it was a beautiful time after the fact. At the moment, absolutely soul-crushing. And I didn't even care who knows it, dude. I got up there and went, what am I going to do now? Like, I'm looking around in all directions going, if I have to, I mean, and you're looking a minimum 3/4 of a mile in any direction. And it's a huge effort to get to any of those places.
Yeah.
And it's daunting when you've just climbed a lot of elevation in a short amount of time. Eventually you get your sea legs. The very next day we saw a nice buck. It made the whole trip. But we just weren't seeing a lot of other deer aside from that. We saw, I think, 5 forked horns other than the big deer I posted a picture of. And it just seemed like we were kind of spinning our wheels. Doug was texting me. He's like, dude, we bedded 13 bucks this morning, but they're just not big enough to go after. And I'm thinking, well, we don't have that problem. I'll shoot a forked horn right now.
Yeah.
I'm not proud. Anything in here is a trophy, you know. It's not, I'm not talking age class or anything like that. Like, this is to drag any animal out of here, spot and stock methods, physically demanding, all that would be a trophy. So I was game for just about anything. I did get a stalk on a little forky next to camp, got to like 29 yards, couldn't find him until I found him, and he was,
and then he was gone.
But yeah. Had a little, when I finally found him, I'm looking through a hole this big and all I can see is his nose. And I'm like, I can't put a 2-inch beast broadhead in his nose. That's not right.
So that was going to be my next question. What broadhead are you running? So it sounds like the beast.
Yeah. So having gone and back to attack with Tate Morgan a couple weeks ago, months ago, he was hanging out with the guys at Beast, David Hauser and Bomars and all that, and got to look at that broadhead, and that thing is freaking impressive. I gotta say, that thing is cool as hell. So I got a couple of those. Otherwise I'm running Schwackers.
Okay.
I have a couple of those in the quiver as well. I shot my buck with those last year. I shoot the, I think it's a 261
standard
Levi Morgan edition. It's no, they're blue.
Yeah, these that's ones, what I mean.
The Levi Morgan edition, you can pin the blade shut so that they do not expand, and you can shoot into foam and practice with them. And I really like that feature, so I've shot those. They worked great on my deer last year. No complaints whatsoever. But I really wanted to give these beasts a try. They're crazy sharp. The blades, I don't know, people probably already know all this, but like the blades, once they deploy, they're not slaved together. If they come into ribs, if ribs are running this way, so to speak, and they run in like this, that blade can shut and get past that rib that it's touching and then open up on the backside.
Yeah,
they can move independent from each other.
And they're spring loaded, so they open back up. That's the big thing that I was just talking to a customer about today, was the fact that these, you know, if your broadhead goes through the rib cage, there's no, yeah, nothing projecting it to open back up afterwards. And so the difference between the beast and your standard mechanical is it has something.
A standard broadhead would just stay put and it would wedge itself between those two bars, meaning the ribs.
Yeah.
If you happen to come into the ribs like this, you know, bummer. If you come in like this, you know, you're all good. But like here, once those things deploy, normally they can't shut back up.
Yeah.
Because like a Schwacker, they come from this way, they cam over, and now they're deployed. And once they're here, they're not changing that angle. Whereas these are independent and they can shut, go through a shoulder blade, let's say, and open back up.
I guess I'm thinking. I guess I'm thinking more like the T2, the Sever, that style where the blades are down here and my tips of my fingers there are kind of more of the things that deploy them, push them out like that. So that way when they go through the rib cage, they bend. But if you don't have anything pushing pressure back against those blades, they're going to stay at this position and you just lost all that 2-inch cutting diameter.
Well, they can't. I mean, they can't. Once they're here, they can't get any smaller or else they would just stay like this the whole time.
I understand.
Want to check it out.
I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I think maybe I'm not properly.
The Beast has a hell of a spring in it. I think they say they get them from like somebody who builds like valve springs for Indy cars. So like they've got the spring thing figured way out. It was just cool. So that's what I was running. Haven't used them yet. They are extremely sharp. They give you these little finger condoms and a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
That's how you
that's a shout out to an old broadhead company. I think it was Muzzy. I can't remember that put a Band-Aid in their thing because their blades are so sharp. You're going to cut yourself. It's an old shout out to funny. It's a homage to an older broadhead that did that. Whatever. Words are not my lingo.
I think you might've got it that time. Anyway, but that's what I was running. I hope to.
So, still what stopped pass you from? Yeah, I want to get back out for bear. What stopped you from making a stock on that big buck? Just because I don't know any of the story, please enlighten me.
So we about died getting to where we were glassing. Didn't stop to bring water with us to the very top. So we were kind of like, we only had about a day and a half worth of water once we got up on top where we set camp. So like any effort from there was going to use up some water. We hadn't located anything else. We ended up finding a snowdrift around the corner that we could have used, had we stayed much longer, but, we were just weighing out, like, do we chase everything? Do we chance blowing them out on the very first morning? I mean, last year the deer that I ended up killing, I lost sight of him and assumed he bedded down, went over there. Sure enough, he was bedded down and it all worked out. So I was kind of like, hey, I'm here to play aggressive. I want to get in and get out and get back home and hunt D zone as soon as I can. You know, Doug was back in there for 12 days. And once you get dropped off with the horses, you're there.
Yeah.
So there's no real, hey, if I get this done now, I can go back and do something else. Which is not really how you should hunt Nevada like that. Honestly, like it's just not efficient. You got to slow down and play on their terms because this shit is not coming to you. And that's just something a couple times now I'm just learning that you got to really just forget what day it is and just do what needs to be done when it can be done. And if it doesn't work out today, do it tomorrow. But anyway, we did end up going down after those deer. He had a running mate with him. He had a nice fork and horn with him. We lost sight of those deer at 8:30. We went down there at 3. And it was like an 800-foot elevation drop, which like once you've climbed all that way, you kind of don't want to lose any, but that's just, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So we tiptoed through the rocks the best we could. It was kind of a nasty, rocky spine towards where we thought they were bedded. And we rolled over this knoll and happened to be glassing this little chute and found that fork horn looking right at us at about 150 yards. So I took my boots off and tried to slip off the edge and do a loop and thinking maybe he would just keep eyes on my cousin and think, you know, if he stays his distance and he stays his distance, everything's going to work out, not knowing that I'm making a loop. And eventually that deer just didn't like him sitting there, I don't think, and just slowly kind of got out of there anyway. I never did see the big one that was running with him. I'm sure he was down there somewhere, but yeah, just didn't work out. We did go after it.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you're shooting the Proven 34?
Yes, sir.
What's your poundage?
70.
Ooh, big boy.
Oh yeah,
big muscles. Boy. Yeah,
that bow shoots like a freaking dream, man. I love that thing.
I think
if I didn't have such a pretty target bow, like it, I would have no problem. Like when I started shooting Outlaws, I shot a 35-inch Matthews.
Halon X.
What was it? Halon X. Yes, sir. Not X Comp. Halon X.
Yeah.
I shot myself into a 2 with that thing and killed an elk with that exact bow. Like that bow was just, I like bows in that 35-inch range. So like when I saw this thing and I felt how just awesome it held, like there were times where I was like, dude, I'm going to throw my bars on this thing and run it for like Lodi or something. But
no, it wasn't Lodi. I think it was BTB. You were trying to find a new partner by scaring me and saying, hey, I think I'm going to run these 2.46s in this Bowtech Proven 34.
Bro, it shoots, man. It just does.
100%. It all that matters is that you make.
If I only had the one, I could make it work. I guarantee it.
Yes, 100%. There's a guy that works at the shop right now, Joe. He is shooting the RX9. And what? I don't know his last name. Oh, Ruiz. Joe Ruiz. He was shooting trad during our indoor league last year, which reminds me, I want to tell you guys quickly before we go any farther, because I meant to bring it up earlier. You guys, our indoor league is going to start the third Tuesday of 2025, of October, I should say, third Tuesday of October. If I could bring up the calendar, that would be fantastic. And nothing on my computer seems to be working, so I'll pull it up on my phone. It should be my birthday, to be honest, so let me see here.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it is. So it's October 21st. That's not my birthday. And it'll be...
October birthday?
No, I have a January birthday. I don't know why I said that.
Wow. What an attention whore. Carry on.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Anywho, our Tuesday indoor league will be open to anyone who wants to sign up for 15 weeks. It'll be $150 and that will run from October, the third week in October to the last week of January. And after that, I am all open, you guys, to staying and doing that all the way through Vegas. I just need people to want that.
That's a lot longer.
It is. It is. And yes, it is very generous. I know. I just need people to want to show up. That's it. We're going to have minimum 15 weeks up to the end of January. And then we will look at adding some weeks. However, this year, for the first time, we are going to have a final prize incentive. 15 weeks, top 10 scores, your worst five, your top 10 scores will go towards a final first place of Wilderness Indoor Archery League. There will be a first place trophy, prize, pot, etc. I have not decided on what I want to do with that yet, what it's going to look like. But if you show up for all 15, great. Minus your worst five scores, get knocked out.
So you really need to show up for 10.
You just need to show up for 10. And those best 10 scores will put you in a spot for first, second, and third, and the first place prize. It's going to be worth it, you guys. I'm really excited.
What are you thinking about giving Caleb for first place then?
This is Tuesday.
Oh.
You know, I was looking at the scores. I was looking at the scores for last year. Caleb shot two scores that were not 300s. Two. Guess who won the money? Guess who won the money that the both of those times?
I don't want to say you because you're trying to bait me to do it.
Yours truly.
Don't do that. It's freaky in my ears when you do that.
So yeah, look out for that, guys. I'll be posting stuff up on the Wilderness Facebook and the Instagram. You guys will get it. Call in, get your spot. I have 19 spots available for Tuesday night. Show up for at least 10 of them, and you get a chance to win some money, some prizes, things like that.
Two free beers at Sully's.
That too. That's just if you show up every Tuesday. And so look out for that, you guys. And I'm also going to have something that I'm going to do myself. I think it's kind of cool. It's something that I've talked about for outlaw stuff. A lot of people know, but some people don't know. I'm now on the outlaw board, but I'm thinking about trying to get into more of the most improved shooter award. Something that
the best sandbagger.
No, like think about
I'm kidding.
Think about Jesse 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
He had a standout year. He came in as a six and he shot himself into a zero by the end of the year. Yeah. That's the kind.
That's a good one.
I want to reward that, regardless of whether or not your scores end up beating someone who's like, say, an average 292 for the whole league. And sure. Let's say you started at 275 and you work your way up to a 295. I want you to be rewarded for that because you put in the time and the effort. So it's something that I'm going to do. So just because you're an average shooter, you're not a 299 or a 300 shooter. Don't worry, you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have surprises involved. We throw money around every week. So show up, come shoot. I got 19 spots available and you can sign up now. I got the sign up sheet at the shop. Call in. It's $150 for all 15 weeks. And then, like I said, for those who want to keep going for Vegas, I'm going to keep going as long as I have more than two people wanting to show up. So with that, I'm quickly going to share with you, Elliot, my bow hunting story because I went out this past.
You bow hunted this year?
I went out last weekend, went bow hunting with.
Did you go poach on Maya?
No, jeez. Don't say that too loud. They don't know yet.
Yeah.
No, I went out bow hunting this this past weekend, and I went out there with some family, and we were up in D4, and I'm not expecting to see anything whatsoever. Like, it's 100 degrees. And I'm not expecting to see anything. I saw a little bear on the way up, probably 100 pounds, just a little guy. And I look to the right, and there's the campground right there. And I'm looking in, and there's little kids, like Charlotte. There we go. I had to say Wyatt's name first. I was Charlotte size running around outside. 50 yards away from this bear, and they have no idea. And I'm like, hey guys, bear headed right down the hill towards you. And so that was kind of cool to see a bear, because that's pretty much what I'm going for in California this year. And then tons of quail, mountain boa.
Shoot your bears, folks. We need your help.
Yes, go kill them all of them. Go kill them all. Bears are a problem. Legally. In California. Yes, I'm not.
Let's hit the quota for the first time in our lives. Dogs.
Since dogs. Let's hit the quota, you guys. A lot of you guys don't know, but last year a bear report was released, and that was a 2.5 year long report done independently. And it showed that we have 4 times the sustainable number of bears in California. So we
Woohoo!
Yeah, 4 times. The sustainable number. The sustainable number is 15,000 to 25,000, and 25,000 is on the edge of that sustainability.
And you know what's crazy with that is that number of, what is it, 12 or 1,600 bears? 1,600, I think it is?
1,750 is what it was 17, last year.
Okay, well, whatever that number is, hasn't changed since we had 20,000 bears on the landscape. Now we have 60,000+, and the number's never moved.
No, they changed it from 1,500 to 1,750 2 years ago.
What?
Yeah.
Don't you try to bullshit me with new numbers.
Man, you know, it's kind of that thing. You always, I'm pretty certain.
Doesn't matter, because we barely break 1,000 every year. It doesn't matter. We're not hitting the number.
No, I personally haven't seen us hit 1,000 in the last 3 years. I could be wrong, but I always stop looking after about November, because I'm not going out in December. So we're at the 63,000 to 85,000 bears in California, and the sustainability rate is 15 to 25. So get out there, fill those bear tags, you guys. Don't just go hunting for deer. Yes, help your local deer. Help your local golf course deer, and go kill some bears.
There's ways to eat bear. A lot of people are like, "Oh, the bear is gross." Figure it out.
Fun fact, because I got these. The bear was the original settler's food. Bear was the preferred meat, and deer was thrown away. Their deer were killed for their pelts, and that's where the fun fact of your dollar being called a buck comes from.
Oh, I think I have heard something like that now.
Because that's what a buck's pelt was worth, a dollar.
I'll be damned.
I know a thing or two.
You
want
to know something?
Yeah, I do. Tell me. Teach me.
Beaver tastes awesome.
I know. I know.
I know what you're thinking. You already know. I'm talking. It's good, dude. It's so damn good. I want to shoot all the beavers in the.
I took you so seriously until you said that. Because I'm thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, he's killed a beaver. You know, he had a beaver infestation, and things were eradicated. Yeah, exactly. Him. Yeah, and ate the tail too.
You guys, don't sleep on beaver. Don't sleep on the tail. Stuff's really good. It's so good.
I personally love bear. I think you shared some beaver with me and it was delicious. I can't remember if that's true or not. I could be lying. It's been a couple years. But bear's one of my favorite meats. I love cooking bear. It's delicious to me. Now, I understand if you don't want to eat your coastal bears because they're eating on fish. I can get down with that a little bit more. I can sympathize with you a little bit.
I don't give
but
a shit. Suck it up.
You can make burger. The same people that say, I don't want to eat my bear that kill coastal bear, they eat salmon too.
Dude, we have very few bears that are out there just chomping on salmon. This is not Alaska. Our bears are pretty good. Now, if you got garbage bears because they're near a campground, it is what it is. I understand. But we got to do something. We got to do something because we can't do nothing about the mountain lion problem. That's already ridiculous. Now we got wolves. We're totally screwed. For screwed.
So everyone
is political, but Jesus,
get out there.
Predator management. Let's do it.
Do your part. Kill a bear this year. I want to see that quota filled by November, you guys. And I know we can do it. So get out there. Shoot your bear
chances
attack
with your bow. In my opinion, your best chance to see them is in archery season. They're out, they're feeding on choke cherries and whatnot.
Yep.
Like, they're making noise. I find more bears with my ears because the sun comes up, 7:30 rolls around, and you hear just ruckus thrashing in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start scanning, and more times than not, I've found bears by just watching brush move and go, there's something in there right there. And then you see them stand up and strip the choke cherries off of a high branch or something. It's actually a lot of fun. It's pretty damn exciting if you're not seeing any deer anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So we went out deer hunting. And I'm rolling around on the quad, got him on the back. And we're driving, seeing lots of bear crap. All choke cherries too, and get up to the, it looks like Mars with some trees and bushes put on top of it. Like, I'm thinking there's no chance I'm seeing a deer up here at all. There's no chance. And I stop the quad for a minute, grab, you know, my liquid death, crack it open, put it in my cup holder. I look forward. There's bucks crossing the road 300 yards in front of me. And I'm like, no way. Right in the open. Like, there's no cover. Now, mind you, all they have to do is sit down and the sage or whatever that spiny brush is, but the I call it buck brush.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Well, buck brush is a big bush. Big, nasty, really tough bush. And then sage is, you know, potent. Smells good.
No, I know.
It smells like a mule deer season.
Yeah, it does. It wasn't an adequate, you know, description. Buck brush is what's there. and so...
That's good.
There's no trees. There's a creek a few hundred yards off with some trees.
A creek?
Lining it. Yeah, a creek. I don't even know if there's water flowing. That's how hot it is out there. So these deer walk across the road. And I drive up the road. I turn and I'm like, hey, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to...
Who are you telling this to?
My father.
Oh.
And I'm like, hey.
Are you talking to yourself in the third person?
Breaking down that fourth wall. John, what are we going to do here? And so I don't have a deer tag. So I went up to go bear hunting. I went up to go bear hunting. Bear hunting. Yeah. And... That's what I went for. I'm going bear hunting in California, guys.
Hey,
that's what I'm here
for.
Yeah. And if you can't find bear, message me. I will drop an onyx pin for you to where I got bear on camera. So don't even worry about it. Anywho, deer season. Father's got his bow out and everything. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? Do you want to get off now and I'll keep going down the road? Take their attention down the road. He goes, no, just drive up to where they're at and drop me off. So sure enough, I just
drive by protocol.
So I drive by, he hops off really quick, and I just keep going down the road. And
yep, nothing to see here.
Now when we got there, I didn't see any deer, so I was like, okay, so they went over this. Now, I go about 200 yards up the road. I get off and I go in as well because it kind of the landscape goes like this. And I want to see where, because if he gets off and he's pushing them this way, I want to be here to direct him as we move forward. And so, you know, hour goes by dealing with this. And I, you know, use the little boy's room and get back on the quad, go back up and grab him. And he's like, yeah, so I got off the quad, walked about 10 yards in, and there they were, right there, 20 yards out. Four. And perfect. He's like, so I grabbed my arrow out of my quiver.
So I just started blasting.
Danny DeVito, that's hilarious. got me good. He's like, so I just... knock a quiver, you know, pull out my arrow out of the quiver. Knock the whole quiver, all five of them. I pull out my arrow, I put it in the bow, and I knock it, and I look down.
That's how you do it.
And I don't have my release.
Big uh-oh.
Yeah, and there's 2-3 bucks, a couple of does right there. All of them were legal in California. None of them trophies by any means, but all of them were legal.
Everything's a trophy.
Yeah, I think one of them was a 2x3.
Perfect.
Yeah, totally fine buck in full
excellent velvet.
Giant,
full mature deer.
Yeah, all of them were mature deer. None of them were spikes or anything. And he goes to knock his arrow and he goes, I don't have my release. He goes, well, I guess I'm going to do this with my fingers.
Oh, Lord.
So he grabs onto the string and he looks up, and for whatever he was doing with the arrow and whatnot, they had sensed out that there was something right there that they needed to pay attention to. So the moment he goes and pops up, they see him bust out, gone. And, yeah. So this doe hangs around for like 20 minutes and
shoot the doe.
By the way, I see you. Don't worry. you know, he's sitting there throwing rocks at the doe, trying to get it to move, and it sits up looks at him and then sits back down, sits up, looks at him. So that's my bow hunting story for this year so far. Success in the moonlit desert of Mars, but it was pretty cool to see because I haven't seen a legal buck in California during deer season in quite a few years. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Seeing legal deer is a nice shot in the ass that you need every once in a while. Let me tell you, I've seen some bucks in zones that people scoff at, and it has not ruined me completely, but made me really hyper-focused. And now all I want to do is shoot big deer in general zones, and it's a dumb goal to have, but boy, it would be cool if I could fulfill it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're there. They're people that are like, oh, there's no deer in California. Get out of here.
I mean, we all just saw the...
I just talked to... What?
We all just saw the 32-inch buck that came out of Northern California.
Yes. Yes.
32 inches.
X6A or B or something.
Yeah.
Dude, I talked to Tate the other day. He was hunting the west side and saw a deer that he thought was absolute giant from Montana. Maybe we'll have him on one day to tell the story. But, I mean, big, big, big deer are out there. California is a huge, huge state. And we got to stop scoffing at it and get after it. I mean,
there's a lot
of people out there going, yeah, no kidding, dude. I've been doing it for a long time. Doug, yeah. I'm talking to you. But I'm just now going, Jesus, man, there are some great deer in just normal over-the-counter units that nobody'd be stoked about at all.
We
wouldn't leave Nevada early to come back to, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. We also need to stop killing all the small deer. There's too many of us out there. I get it. I'm not shaming you at all. I'm not shaming you at all. I've gone out of state and killed smaller deer.
I want to shoot big deer too. Believe me, I do.
Yeah. I get it. But at the end of the day, you need your freezer filled. I understand 100%. I'm not shaming you for it.
I'll tell you this. No. I mean, I've killed my fair share of forkies, let me tell you. But I don't think there's any deer that I would pass up if it meant like I earned it. You know what I mean? Like if it was a spot and stock type of thing, if I was packing them out, if I was in a decent ways. Like I've come across deer in a vehicle, got out and watched them do this stuff where they're like flapping their ears because they're dumb and young and they don't know what's going on. And you shoot them. That's all great. And you get meat in the freezer. But
I understand.
As long as you feel like you earn it. Trophies are trophies, man. It doesn't matter how big it is.
I understand completely because when you're doing the whole road hunting and you get out and you jump out and you do that 5-10 minute spot and stock. It's different from the kind of spot and stock that you're talking about.
I mean, it's cool. It works. It's whatever. But once you've done it like the harder way, boy, there is nothing more gratifying. I was talking to Trail from Go Hunt about that in Utah and how much that sets a hook into you when you've done it like by yourself, just the hard way. It sucks sometimes in the moment, but boy, those are the ones that you really look back on and go, that was as cool as it could have been.
Yes.
And that 100%. Sticks with you for a long time.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward.
So bad.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. You guys, we're going to get better at this. Don't worry about it. We know this.
Tell who's coming on soon, hopefully.
So we have a young up and coming star legend to many of us.
He's a star already, brother.
He's already a star, but he is an up and coming legend. We're going to have the one, the only Caleb Quiocho gold medalist from the Youth World Championships in Winnipeg, Canada, up ASAP, you guys.
Stay posted. Yuba City's finest.
Yes, Yuba City's finest spam eating champion. He's going to be.
I got to get on my spam game.
I know. It's got to be the salt. It's definitely doing things.
I'm all for it, dude. I'm all for it.
I'm all for having another kidney stone as long as it comes with gold medals. I'm totally fine with it. I'll take them all day long. I shot the 900 last year with a kidney stone being passed. I just thought I hadn't been shooting for a while and my back hurt. Nope, I had a kidney stone.
Right.
Yeah.
Forgot about it. I had to go to the hospital. Spam, man.
No, not at all. It's many other things for John, but so that's gonna be our next episode. I'm really excited to have him on. We're gonna get into a lot of the questions that Caleb hasn't answered for us that I know he can answer. The ones that we all want to hear about, the mental strategies, the tough times that he goes through, and how he approaches those.
And pick one.
Yes, absolutely. With those big flashy glasses.
You ask the good ones.
Dude, yes, you ask the fun ones.
Right? So my family's from Minnesota. We're a diehard Vikings fan. Skull brother. Caleb is our Justin Jefferson of archery. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Dude, I think it's awesome.
I think
the glasses, the hair.
I know.
It's a good thing.
It's flashy. And the thing that I love about it, and
Everybody needs a signature.
I was literally just talking about it the other day to family. I was, because we're out shopping and I saw these glasses and I was like, damn, I think I'd look good in these. And I was like, I can't buy them though, because Caleb wears something similar and everybody think I'd be copying Caleb. But what people may guess about me is that I have somewhat of an artistic personality, and sunglasses were my thing back in the day. Yes, I do shoot a target
in there.
I did. I do shoot a target from top to bottom, but it's an artistic style. And so I used to always have the flashiest sunglasses. And my old boy Derby, he destroyed them. He loved chewing up sunglasses. He chewed through like $1,200 worth of sunglasses. But
I don't think I've ever seen you wear sunglasses ever.
I know. I don't really wear them anymore because they're all the money that I spent on those, I can't really justify to myself paying to do that again.
Well,
I've done it on the skin instead. So with that being said, made it a little bit more permanent.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap it up. You guys, we're going to have some awesome guests. Me and Elliot have already been working on a few people that we're really excited to bring you from the bow hunting world to the target world to the industry world. People that you otherwise wouldn't hear from, learn about the production, the engineering, the things that go on behind the scenes that we don't get to see firsthand. I'm really excited that we're going to be able to bring those people to you guys. And we're going to ask you guys for what you want to hear. Hey, give me some questions. Give me, what do you want to know? And we're going to get those questions answered.
At one point or another, our Archery After Hours Instagram will be up and running. I know it's reserved and locked in.
Yep.
I haven't used it yet, but I'm sure we'll be in the future.
Yes. You guys go on to Instagram. It is archery_afterhours. And that is our Instagram handle or whatever you call that. Go follow us. Check in. We're going to be pretty active here. And we really look forward to bringing you guys some awesome guests. So to wrap it up, I'm going to close out with this. This is something I came up with and I'm really excited about it. So there you have it.
That's good. You talked it up really highly.
No, you know me. I like dabbling in this writing stuff. And so.
Oh, Shakespeare.
Hardly.
Hit us with it.
So there you have it. The first Archery After Hours podcast episode. From Papa Dick in 1945 to Caleb today, Wilderness Archery is more than just a shop. It's a family, a team, and a community. And the best part? The story isn't done yet. Check us out at wildernessarchery.com. Check out our online store. Grab your newest broadhead affixiation. Swing by the range and join us for the next chapter. Until then, shoot straight, and keep having fun, you guys. We look forward to bringing you guys more of these awesome episodes. And like I said, we promise to get better at it. And once again, we look forward to sharing.
Yeah, go up from here.
It's, you know, it's a long way uphill, but as I always say, never satisfied. Always working harder, always working towards that next thing.
Whatever Cameron Haynes says.
Yeah. I like that. I like that better. I like your version better.
He says, because that prick blocked me like 10 years ago, but we'll get to that in another day.
Keep hammering. It's
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hammer it.
Anyways, you guys, this is John Scar and Elliot Peters on the one, the only Archery After Hours podcast. We look forward to seeing you soon with our next guest and going into a little bit more of the target archery scene. But after that, we look forward to bringing you an absolute stunner of a bow hunter and talking to you further about more bow hunting items and getting into the hunting side of archery. This is not going to just be a target archery podcast. It's going to be an industry engineering side podcast along with bow hunting and target archery. We're going to get into everything, and we look forward to sharing that with you guys. So if you have any questions, any thoughts, or anything you guys want to see, reach out to either one of us, Elliot or John, or feel free to go and shoot us a message on Instagram at archery_afterhours.
Yes, that's who we are.
Yes, archery _afterhours. All right, you guys, have a good night. Stay classy. Northern Sacramento. Yeah. All right, you guys, have a good night. We look forward to seeing you soon. And once again, this is Archery After Hours, the Wilderness Archery Podcast with your host, John Scar. Yeah, third time's the charm. We're going to get this. We're going to get this. One of these is going to work. All right, buddy. It's always good to see you. I look forward to talking to you again soon with our close buddy. And have a good night.
Later, buddy.
All right. Talk to you soon. Wait, don't leave. Just.